The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Football Weekly Extra. I'm Max Rushton and this is my final appearance in this emergency loan spell. Later we'll reflect on the highs and lows of my latest stint here on the pod, which began all the way back on Monday. Today we barely talked about all foreign things on Monday, cue huge complaints from the hipsters on the blog. We will rectify that and look ahead to the greatest cup competition in the world, the FA Cup. Thank you very much to Bring On The Backlash for this review of Monday's podcast. Vile, name-dropping, inane, ill-informed banter. Think I'll just stop listening whenever Max Rushton presents from now on. Although, as always, it's...
Oh my God.
This is one of the nicer ones. As always, it's Barry that's the real problem, and we all agree on that. So we've made an executive decision, and Barry is benched for today. So I'm joined by Mr. John Ashdown. Hi, John.
Hiya.
James Horncastle, good morning.
Hey, Max.
Hi, Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
And just one more review before we crack into things. This is from Oliver Kahn, who says, I know there's no way of saying this without coming across as a stuffy old bore, but Rushton always manages to turn the pod into a boring lad-style banter fest. It reminds me of those BBC Three Top 100 World Cup Moments type programmes where it's just talking heads desperately trying and failing to be funny. So I just wanted to check if any of you have ever been on one of those talking heads. Ian, you raise your hand. What have you done?
I was on the worst England team ever.
Okay.
Which controversially voted Welsh midfielder Vinnie Jones into the 11, which was the cause of most of the complaints, though not all of the complaints.
But did you just try and fail to be funny?
I think most people say that's my thing, trying and failing to be funny.
It's good to have a niche.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to work it.
James, have you ever appeared on a Talking Heads football-based programme?
I'm afraid I haven't, but I noticed you name-dropped already there. Is that the Oliver Kahn?
I don't know if Oliver Kahn writes on the blog, but let's hope he does.
Why were you late today, Max?
Right, I've got to drive to Sky after this. So I had to park the car, and you can only park for 2 hours at a time. And so I parked, and you wouldn't believe I actually come in to prepare for an hour or so. So I had to park, and then I had to run out and repark. So £9. I've paid for parking around here.
That's your fee, isn't it?
It's almost, I think I make a pound today. Just to check, John, have you ever done a Talking Heads?
I've not, but it's the dream, isn't it?
Because I've never done it.
Really?
Actually. Yeah. I think I even turned down that one that you did. Not for the money. I just thought, I don't want to do it. I'm just going to sit there and insult footballers that I'll end up sitting next to at a terrible event. And
Barry turned it down as well.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, that tells you something.
I was a long way down that list.
Right, let's see if we can, if everyone can promise to make this a not a lad-style banter fest.
Banter-free.
Is that okay? And we'll try that in part one, which is the Champions League special. Welcome to part one. We'll start with Chelsea at PSG. A confession, you know, and not like me to name drop. Is it one of these things? John, you're looking at me with disdain.
It's a banter fest already.
The reason I didn't see this match was I was hosting an evening with Sean Derry at Cambridge United.
Nice.
So, who's doing a fine job. More on that later. You can educate me. 2-1 to PSG, late Cavani goal. Chelsea's still very much in it, though, James, aren't they?
Yeah, I thought so. I think they surprised many people with how they performed at the Parc des Princes. Because PSG were going into that game, 35 games unbeaten, they were being built up. But I don't think they were as good in European terms as that run suggested. I don't think Chelsea was bad as their place in the Premier League suggests. They defended really well, considering they were without Terry and Zouma. That makeshift partnership with Ivanovic going back to centre-back and Cahill coming in, I thought they defended really bravely, as that's a term we like to use with Chelsea defenders. Brave. John Terry, but yeah, I think they'll be the happier, actually. I thought PSG actually played really well for the first 20 minutes. Then Chelsea came into it, countered really well through Willian. I thought Costa could have maybe done a bit better with some of his chances. But, you know, on the whole, I think he was okay as well. And yeah, I mean, Courtois was forced into a lot of saves. A lot was straight at him. So perhaps if PSG's finishing had been a little bit better, a little bit either side of him rather than straight at him, they might have been honed and hosed.
There's a lot of hope for the second leg with some of PSG's defending. I mean, one moment in particular where Diego Costa found himself a good metre away from David Luiz and very nearly scored. I actually thought it was a really good performance by Chelsea, which is weird for, you know, losing in a fixture they would have in the past thought that they had a right to win. But they are very much the poorer, weaker club compared to PSG at the moment. And it was sort of very typical of what Hiddink's done in the way that he's moved quickly to try and, you know, drop everyone a little bit deeper, eradicate the mistakes, stop giving the ball away, just make everything a lot more sensible. I think you come out of that with an away goal, Stamford Bridge, and yeah, so they've, you know, evens chance to go through.
John Ashton?
Yeah, well, Ian says it is a sign of diminished expectations, isn't it, really, that you can...
Plucky little Chelsea.
Absolutely. Go away and
little horses.
Get outplayed for kind of quite large chunks, really, of the game, I thought. And then they had a good patch just before half-time. Lose 2-1 could have been a lot worse, and you sort of come away thinking, well, that's not bad for Chelsea in their current state. I've got less optimism than you two. I think the PSG are just a better team at the moment and will probably do enough.
I think on Monday, someone on the pod was saying the fact that Ivanovic wasn't going to play right back was a bonus because his pace is less exposed at centre-back.
Yeah, you'd think he could cause more damage in the centre, but it actually seemed relatively together. And Azpilicueta back on his correct side for about the first time in 2 years.
Baba Rachman did well as well. I think he put the cross in for that Costa chance. I think after the change they made in the second half when they brought on Cavani for Lucas, okay, it's obvious to point this out because he went on and scored the winning goal. But I think Lucas is one of those players who's all pace. He's not a great finisher. He's got some great goals, but he's not a great finisher. And too many of their chances kind of fell to him, really. And I think if Cavani were to play, he's been kind of marginalised of late because I think he came back late after the winter break, was punished for that. I think he expects to leave in the summer. Di Maria's mainly become the main man after Ibrahimovic. And yet it was kind of revenge for him because we all remember him blazing that shot over the bar against at the Bridge a few years ago. And, you know, I think he took his chance and did really well with it.
Something Ibrahimovic was saying today that he's you know, at the end of his contract, he's something big is going to happen, and people are putting two and two together and saying he's going to join Manchester United. Any credence?
Well, apparently he sought out the English journalists in the mix zone. So it wasn't just something that it dropped in. He actually went to find the English people.
Is that the first time a footballer has ever tried to seek out English journalists?
Well,
ever.
Funnily enough, I think John Terry did it the other day with the contract thing and coming out and literally trying to attract the attention of certain journalists so that he could get his message out. So there's been a little bit of a rash of it of late. But, I mean, Zlatan in the Premier League will be great fun.
I think Cavani's a more likely player to go to the Premier League in the summer. I think Ibra, 34, getting to that stage of career, he's box office. I mean, just watching PSG the other night, it was like watching a circus because, I mean, they had Uptown Funk as their goal music.
That's so depressing, isn't it?
and Zlatan, when he scored, he kind of slid on his knees and seemed to just open up his arms and say, Zlatan. And it was just... It was brilliant.
That would fit Man United's recruitment policy, though, because they're moving towards the sticker album recruitment policy, aren't they? They want great big names to sell great big advertising deals.
Yeah.
Do we think he wants to come?
That's the suggestion, isn't it? That he wants to join the MLS eventually, but
so we're just a stepping stone.
Well, yeah. It seems to be because
the big show.
The plan seems to be that Beckham's Miami franchise would be the place that he wants to go because they're mates. And then that's not going to be up and running for the next two seasons. So come to the Premier League, tread water for a bit at Old Trafford, and then head off to the States. Good work.
Yeah. His agent's Mina Raiola. And Raiola, of course, was the guy who took Pogba away from Manchester United. And I know it's a different management at the top of the club now with Ed Woodward, who likes to do big deals with big agents, mainly Jorge Mendes. But I still would be a little bit surprised and... I think it would be great from a neutral perspective. But whether he's what United need right now, I don't think so.
Really, you want him to go to Palace to play with Adebayor?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Where he's on such a level, like, where he doesn't fit in at many places. You know, it has to be a marquee team. You know, he's not going to go to Leicester, even if they are in the Champions League.
What did you make of Roy Keane finally on Chelsea hitting out at Eden Hazard and saying he'd kick him up and down the training pitch?
I think if we were looking for a reminder why it didn't work out for Keane as a manager, that might help lead us towards the light.
Interesting statistic. Laurent Blanc is only the second manager to defeat Gus Hiddink when Gus has been managing Chelsea. The only other one.
It would have been the Champions League semi?
I don't think it was.
Wasn't it? Is it Pards or Pulis or somebody?
Harry Redknapp.
Yes.
Yeah.
Harry Redknapp.
There we go. Benfica won Zenit 0. I watched the last 15 minutes of this, which is probably what I needed to see. And it's sort of horror last minute for Zenit, really.
Yeah, and for Andrzej Villas-Boas, I suppose, who's going back there.
Thanks, James, for picking up. Where I said, Ian, he looked at me like I killed both his parents.
It wasn't the fairy tale return, I suppose, for AVB and Hulke, whose greatest triumph came at Benfica's expense when they were in charge of Porto. I think it was always going to be difficult for this Zenit team, given their last competitive game was played at the beginning of December, and it was in the Champions League against Ghent. Lots been made of this Benfica Wunderkind. Was it Renato Sanchez, who United supposedly bid for in January, 30 million. But I don't think this Benfica team is particularly up to anything great. I think it's paradoxically one of the sort of least impressive Benfica teams of the last few years. It's a very young team, and yet it's got into the Champions League knockout stages, and it's advantage Benfica going to the second leg, so they could make the quarterfinals.
But they're the team you'd want one of those two if you were getting through to the next round, would you?
Yeah, well, it depends. I think if Zenit were to come back out of this and, you know, then start playing in the league again and get healthy, get fit again, get that match rhythm, then they could be a threat because they were excellent in the group stages. They won. Yeah, they were perfect right through to match day six. But, you know, I think if one of the big clubs is going, or one of the, let's say, dark horses gets into the quarterfinals, I think they'd be looking at getting one of Benfica and Zenit or one of Wolfsburg and Ghent.
Well, we should talk about Wolfsburg and Ghent then, shall we? And we'll do Roma Real Madrid in a second. Ghent were 3-0 down, scored twice late on to keep the tie alive. Who would like to comment on Julian Draxler's impudent chip?
No, it was outstanding, not least because a nutmeg preceded it. And he's a player who has long been linked with Arsenal. When he was at Schalke, he was seen as the best of the crop of young players who were coming through there, and there's been a lot. Max Meyer, Goretzka, Leroy Sané at the moment. And he seemed to sort of, his star was on the wane a little bit the last couple of years because of these physical injuries that he'd had. But we're now beginning to see him, you know, replace Kevin De Bruyne. He was a big player to replace at Wolfsburg, the outstanding player in the Bundesliga last year. And now he's kind of, now he's beginning to deliver. I think that was his third goal in four games. It was just from their point of view to be 3-0 up, home and hose. It was a shame that they then went and conceded two goals, but those are three away goals. So, yeah.
So we think Wolfsburg will go through. Roma, Real Madrid. I thought Roma were quite unlucky, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's Luciano Spalletti, isn't it? You know, king of the 4-6-0 formation in his last stint at Roma, and I thought it was an entirely sensible way to go about business. Hold deep and try and get something on the break against Real Madrid. And it was working for the first half. It worked brilliantly. I think that's the first time they haven't had a shot on target since 2011. So Twitter was telling me.
Oh, really?
In the first half of a Champions League game. I should have given more details to that stat because I made it sound a lot more remarkable than it was.
I was impressed that you had a stat.
Yeah. I'll just bring this red folder for show, you know.
What's in it?
I do. There's very little. There's four pieces of paper.
You look like the Chancellor.
Yeah. Of a country sure with a very that. Small GDP. One sheet of A4 in it.
Chancellor of the Isle of Man.
But yeah, but I mean, not a lot of end product with Roma, I guess, but should have had a penalty. Dzeko had a great chance. Salah looked very impressive, even though in a sort of Champions League Aaron Lennon style, gets to the byline a lot and doesn't deliver a whole lot.
Yeah, no, his decision making in those key positions was poor. But he was a brilliant out for Roma. He got them up the pitch. When they were dug in the trenches, if you like, in their own third. And I thought they were really unlucky. People looked at that game and were saying, oh, Roma got what they deserved. They were really unambitious. But you're playing Real Madrid, and this is a team that, in the last couple of years in the Champions League, has had their pants pulled down and taken royal spankings by Bayern Munich and Barcelona. So you can understand the game plan that Spalletti together and the caution of the team not wanting to basically go through the same experience again.
There's really not much you can do when Ronaldo does that.
I was going to say, James, what do you think Roma will do for the second leg then, given that in theory you've got to go out and attack, yet they've had these hammerings in the past? I mean, because that's the risk, isn't it, that now they go to the Bernabeu and it gets a bit messy.
Yeah, I think they'll probably play the same game plan. I think they'll look at it now and say, look, it's 2-0, two away goals. I mean, it's going to be almost impossible for them to get the result to go through. I think they could still draw, get a win, but not the scale of scoreline that they need to go through. But yeah, I mean that was a nailed on penalty.
He wasn't in control of the ball. I know that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But then he was totally nailed, wasn't he?
Yeah, I can't believe, and there was another one as well that Roma were claiming should have been given, and I think the issue for Roma is this team is has shown encouraging signs in the last few weeks, won 4 games in a row, but is still on the road to recovery. They're not there quite yet, but I wasn't impressed by Real Madrid in the slightest. I think the only thing that did for them was the fact that they're they've got a couple of great individuals who scored great individual goals. It wasn't the fruit of a brilliant team performance by any means. And I think, when Zidane comes up against a team that, let's say, have better individuals than Roma and as good a coach as Spalletti, or if not a better one, he'll get found out.
Did anybody see Rafa on on BT? He was actually, he didn't seem too bitter and angry about the whole thing, did he, really?
Well, it seems like in the things that he said since leaving, there are obviously an awful lot of factors, presidential interference and lack of a coherent transfer strategy and things like that. It's almost like he's left with enough reason to leave. His head's held high because he feels that he couldn't have done anything anyway and that no one could do anything anyway, which is, I think you could be quite sympathetic to that view. But he needs a success job now, because Napoli was barely par. And this has gone wrong, and he needs to land somewhere and win something.
Well, no, he's on the merry-go-round now of getting a job, getting sacked, getting 10 million quid. I mean, it's the dream, isn't it? That's what we're all looking for.
There's me offering him advice as he sits there counting his payoff.
All right, that's it for part one. In part two, we'll chat to Sid and we'll start our FA Cup preview.
Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you have many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design, so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/Guardian.
Welcome to part two of Football Weekly Extra. In this part, we'll talk to Sid in Spain and we'll look ahead to Saturday's FA Cup ties. Let's start with Sid, who is on the line now. Sid Lowe, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks. So we have spoken a bit already about Roma Real Madrid. What's the reaction been to Cristiano walking out of that press conference? It was quite fun, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think most people took it as reasonably fun. I think that obviously what's really come from it more than anything else was the comments about Barcelona and about Messi, Neymar, and Suarez, and how he focused the kind of, if you like, the criticism of the idea that they get on so well, saying we don't need hugs and kisses, I don't need all of those kind of things. What matters is on the pitch. And then curiously, when he scores, he runs over to hug and kiss Zidane. But anyway, that's by the by. And of course, there's been focus as well on what exactly he meant when he said that, I know why Leo took the penalty that way, I'm just not going to say. There's a few theories on that.
Although what are the theories?
The fundamental theory, the assumption that most people are making, seems to me to be entirely flawed. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong, but it's entirely flawed if Ronaldo really does believe that. And the assumption that many are making is that Messi did this to give Suarez the goal so that Suarez could keep on scoring and end up as top scorer in La Liga ahead of Ronaldo. In other words, Ronaldo saw it as an attack on him, which obviously is the way he tends to see a lot of things. Now the flaw in that theory, of course, is that the penalty was designed for Neymar. It just so happened that Suarez was, well, doing what Suarez does, which is to be kind of so alert, so determined, so aggressive to get to the ball, that he runs in ahead of Neymar and scores anyway. As Neymar put it after the game, it was meant for me, but Fatty got there first.
That's brilliant. I love that Ronaldo thinks that.
Hang on, to be fair, this is one of the theories and the assumptions that people are making. We don't know for sure that Ronaldo thinks that, but whatever he thinks, it seemed like a very strange thing to say, and it was certainly delivered as if he was, I thought, quite strongly implying that somehow it had something to do with him. Anyway,
interestingly, because Ronaldo also said, when I was at Manchester United, I didn't really speak to anybody, and then I was listening to the fine Alan Brazil on Talksport this morning, who had René Mullenstein on, who said when he was at Manchester United he got on with all of them. What to believe?
Yeah, and Ronaldo. Well, Ronaldo backed away slightly from it, didn't he, in the press conference? And he said, "Look, I'm going to." He used it as an example rather than necessarily as a way of saying all these guys in the United teams were tossers, and I couldn't be bothered to talk to them. His point was that, you know, we really didn't talk very much in that year, and it just doesn't matter. Then he went on to say, you know, we'd say hello, good morning, and stuff, but we didn't need to go out for dinner. We didn't need to have hugs and kisses and so on, and we could still play. Obviously, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the Rio Ferdinand response, which was to imply that it was all down to Ronaldo's tight jeans. I think Ronaldo's fundamental point, of course, is quite right, but it doesn't change the fact that I imagine, or at least it certainly seems logical to assume, that while you can play perfectly good football with people you don't particularly like, if you really do genuinely get on, it probably helps a bit, doesn't it? Because you've got to see these guys every single day.
Barcelona had a penalty last night, didn't they?
And they missed it again. This is the other thing. This is 16 penalties this season. Barcelona have missed 8. Now, here comes the big flashing caveat in the sky. Missed 8, of course, one of those misses is the one that they deliberately missed, the assist miss. Mm-hmm. Because statistically speaking, that, I think, goes down as a miss. Anyway, but they still missed, let's say it's 7 of 16 rather than 8 of 16. It's still a huge number, and Messi, Suarez and Neymar have all missed penalties this year, which, of course, leads us to the inevitable conclusion that playing a short penalty was just the practical thing to do, because these guys are rubbish from the penalty spot.
And it would have been brilliant. It was Suarez who missed it last night, wasn't it? It would have been brilliant if they'd done it again, wouldn't they? Suarez just kicked it to Messi. Yeah, that would have been absolutely brilliant.
It does make you wonder. I mean, when can you do it again? There was an interview last night on the radio with the Sporting goalkeeper, and he said that, you know, he'd actually sort of, before the game, started thinking about that in a way that he'd never done before. And he said to his teammates, be alert, for goodness sake. Let's not let this happen again, just in case. Now, and then, of course, he went on to pose the question, which is, how long does it have to be now before anyone else thinks it's kind of justified to do it again without it looking just like a copycat? Because, of course, one thing's for sure, it would look a bit weird if Real Madrid did this now. Now, I'm not saying they were ever planning to or now thinking about it, but if they suddenly did it now, everyone would go, yeah, you see, you just copy them.
But whoever does it next will screw it up, won't they? That's the risk.
That's quite likely. I think that's the other thing, is as we saw with Henri and Pires, it's probably not quite as easy as it looks, because it's so sort of unnatural a thing to do that I guess it's quite easy to either overhit the pass or underhit the pass or do what Pires did and just sort of scrape your studs across the top of the ball and then wonder why you're standing there looking like a bit of a muppet.
In a funny way, though, it doesn't look as bad when you mess that up as when you try a cheeky chip down the middle and the goalkeeper just stands there. And just,
yeah, or when you just hoof the bloody thing into the stands. You look like much more of a donkey then, don't you?
Sid, we didn't chat on Monday. What's the reaction to Gary Neville actually winning a football match?
Well, I mean, this is quite interesting. There is a real sense of watershed. And to defend Neville, and I think he was quite right, after the game he said, I think the phrase was, this is absolutely not a night for celebration. And he's very clear, and he has, you know, he's under no illusions. One of the things about Neville is he's actually really quite honest and quite direct, disarmingly so at times. And he's under no illusions that they played dreadfully at the weekend. and finally won this game. But it did feel like a watershed because it felt like, first of all, because of the result itself, that's natural. Also because I think of the confidence it may bring to key players. Álvaro Negredo, who's been missing loads of chances, has now scored two games in a row. Both of them not particularly good finishes, but both of them going in, so that may help. The return of the goalkeeper, Diego Alves, is really important in terms of, I think, personality as much as the fact that he makes loads of good saves. Cancelo finally being fit. I think, that, for example, tonight, Valencia play in the Europa League, and with the exception of Mustafi, who I think is suspended, he's got every player available, which is pretty much the first time this season, and that will help. And then the other thing, of course, was after the game, it was announced that Paco Estevan is going to join his coaching staff. Estevan, who was with Rafa Benitez at Liverpool and at Valencia, who I think enables everything that Neville does to be much more fluid, because, you know, not everything needs to be translated. He's got someone there who can get some of the ideas across the player, who's a very good coach anyway. He's not just a kind of glorified translator. And I think it means that the whole thing will just run much, much more smoothly. And I think emotionally as well, that has everyone sort of thinking, okay, here we go. We're almost not quite starting again, but we're heading down broadly in terms of the ideas, the same direction, but with a lot more confidence now. The other thing is there was a players meeting last week, players without the coaches meeting, in which the players kind of came together. And good news for Neville, of course, is that one of the conclusions they came to was not that they would be better off without Neville. They're actually behind him, despite the poor results.
All right, interesting. Sid, thank you as always for your time.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it, Grady. Sid Lowe out in Spain. All right, chaps, let's look into the FA Cup. And we'll start with Arsenal v Hull. This was on the another review on the blog from Sean Ski, who says, as per usual lately, Football Weekly was pathetically lame in its coverage of Arsenal. No analysis of the Arsenal team, actually, except the kind mention of Welbeck coming back to score. Not anything about the first goal, or the fact that in spite of all the commentators predicting the imminent collapse of Arsenal's title challenge, the team stopped the Leicester bandwagon, being one of only two teams to beat them this season so far. So while we're previewing the whole game in the FA Cup, could you just mention the Arsenal-Leicester game, you know, as we go? Is that all right?
Okay.
With everybody? Yeah. And actually, the first goal, I'd even had in my notes on Monday, let's celebrate the cushioned header from Giroud, because it was beautiful. Mm. Would anybody like to celebrate with me?
Go on then.
Great.
Yes, cushioned header.
Arsenal Hull then, what do we think? Because Hull are doing very well in the Championship, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, this is becoming a classic of the FA Cup, a little bit like PSG and Chelsea in the Champions League. Obviously, a repeat of the final they played last year as well. Arsenal won both games. Arsenal have the opportunity this season to win a hat-trick of FA Cups.
No one has done that. Oh, I've got a statistic somewhere. No one's done that since 1885.
Wow.
Blackburn Rovers.
Stunning. And, you know, you have to take your hat off to Wenger and this group of players, because they seem to find a way of coping on all fronts certainly on this front at this time of year, when a lot of other teams seem to come unstuck. And I mean, Hull this season in the Championship have been very good defensively, particularly with Curtis Davies and Dawson. I'd say that's a Premier League centre-back partnership. I think they've only conceded 19 goals this season, but I do think Brucey has some changes up his sleeve, because I think they've got as congested a fixture list as Arsenal have got over the coming weeks. I think they play Ipswich in midweek, which isn't like Barcelona, but for a team that is chasing promotion, is currently top, although they drew against Brighton early in the week. I think their priorities probably lie there rather than in the FA Cup.
There's some similarities with Ipswich and Barcelona, but sort of on or near the coast, aren't they?
Bobby Robson.
There we go. Yeah. John?
Well, I think they're two clubs in quite similar situations in a weird way. They've both got sort of title tilts on the go, and both got sort of, congested fixture lists coming up ahead. Even like the Hull fans, I think, are kind of fairly ambivalent about the FA Cup. Obviously, the huge focus is on getting back in the Premier League, and I think most Hull fans would quite willingly sort of swap an early FA Cup exit for an automatic promotion. So, yeah, I can't really see a shock here.
This is the middle of a tough run for us, aren't they? Leicester, obviously, this, Barcelona Tuesday, away at Manchester United the following Sunday.
This has got routine 2-0 win written all over it in 6-foot-high neon letters. It's a fringe players to go out against a Championship side who've got far bigger fish to fry. This will be as straightforward as they can, with minimal excitement. 2-0.
I like this. Hull have got far bigger fish to fry than Arsenal. Brilliant.
Well, financially, there's, you know, what's the FA Cup compared to getting in the Premier League next season?
Oh, don't say that. Yeah.
I know, it's awful, but it's the way of the world.
They'll finally scrap replays next.
What do we think about that? Because it's been mentioned, hasn't it? Scrapping replays. I mean, I sort of have great memories of a fifth round second replay, and there was a toss of the coin to see whether it would be home for Cambridge or Bristol City, because obviously the first one, they tossed a coin to see where it was, and we won 5-1. It's one of the greatest games I've seen, but I'm not sure if that is reason alone in the current climate to keep replays in the FA Cup.
I think there are a lot of threats to clubs outside the Premier League materialising at the moment. You look at the FA Cup replays, particularly ones from maybe not the Championship, but certainly
Cambridge
lower down.
Cambridge made a million out of the Man United last season.
And you look at the what's going on at Leeds at the moment with Massimo Cellino basically challenging the Football League and the agreement that they have with Sky, which is a collectively bargained TV agreement, and he wants it bargained on an individual basis, so Leeds would get more money because they're almost always on Sky, one of the best followed club outside the Premier League. So if that were to happen as well, in conjunction with this sort of reformatted FA Cup, then a lot of the revenue streams for clubs outside the Premier League would start to dry up a little.
I don't really get it seems a weird season to argue for it as well, given that in previous seasons we've seen a lot of weakened teams being put out by Premier League teams. Yet this season, people have seemed to be going for the FA Cup a bit more. You know, Arsenal have been pretty much putting out full-strength teams. You know, United, Liverpool, perhaps the exception. So there is the option if you end up in a replay, you can rest players. They do have that choice. I don't know if it's an argument from the clubs or if it's an argument from, you know, the FA or whatever. Who actually wants this?
Well, none of us do.
No. Well, as a Southend fan, you know, it's a free lottery ticket, isn't it? You get a good replay, you get piles of money that you wouldn't ordinarily get in a world where your split gate receipts were taken away in the 80s. You lost TV money in the 90s. The EPPP plans taken away, transfer money. It's just something else for them to take.
It's not the only thing that Cambridge spent money on, but before the £1 million for Manchester United, in the home dressing room, there was only one urinal, and now there are three.
Progress. Mm. See, who says there's no trickle-down money?
Now, producer Ben isn't... That's very good. Producer Ben, I don't know why I'm surprised, Ian, but it was, isn't even here today, but he wrote Reading v West Brom, and he sent me notes, gloss over.
Oh, wow.
Which is harsh, isn't it? Would anybody like to talk at all about Reading versus West Brom?
My notes say they've not won in the league since January the 2nd.
So do mine.
But they are a cup team, Reading. Two quarterfinals and a semi in the last 6 years or so. And West Brom is sort of the opposite of a cup team. If I can't really... They got to the semi a few years ago, but I don't really picture West Brom as a cup team, really. So if I was picking a shock, it'd be in that match that we're going to gloss over.
No, thank you. Thank you, John. Watford versus Leeds. A lot going on here with the protest at Leeds and Cellino and everything. James?
Yeah, I can't believe it's a decade since that Watford-Leeds playoff final. Which was the...
Good God. Was that the Jay Demerit header?
It's the last time Leeds were ever really close of getting back into the Premier League.
AD Boothroyd and Kevin Blackwell in opposite dugouts.
Yeah. little Mourinho. You know, I'm a Leeds fan, and basically ever since I've been with my girlfriend, now wife, the first time we got together... Leeds, that was Leeds' last season in the Premier League, and since we've been together, they've never been back. So
have you made some kind of Faustian pact?
I think I must have done something.
Does so. Mrs. Horncastle also track your relationship on where Leeds were?
I think our relationship hasn't had the same lows that Leeds has.
But does it have the fiery, you know, is it that kind of relationship?
Well, I mean, we got married in May and we moved out. It's been a lot of stressful situations, a lot of the same tension, I suppose, that Leeds fans have with Massimo Cellino. But no. My relationship is considerably better with my wife than that between Leeds fans.
That's good to know.
Massimo Cellino,
John, what do you think
You'd imagine Watford are just, they're out of their sort of post-Christmas slump. They've got to be one of those teams that are eyeing a trip to Wembley in the semi, if not the final. Did you see, by the way, the Leeds, the projected kind of protest on the side of the stadium? It was really, really good.
Yeah.
Innovative
as well. I've never seen anything like that before.
Well, they projected this image. Well, it was a couple of images on the side of the stand, essentially. So it's this weird, awkward sort of rhombus shape. When I heard that they were doing this, I thought, well, it's going to look a bit cack because, they'll have it'll just look like all raggedy. But they got the people who projected the, remember the Gail Porter was projected on the House of Parliament. Yeah. They got the same people in that did that to do this projection, which must have cost a fair bit, I suppose, unless they're Leeds fans, I'm not sure. And it looked really good. And so there was one sort of screen saying, sort of Chileno out type stuff. And then one which had 17 reasons for why he should leave. And just sort of words dotted around of like watermelons and pie tacks and touched the breast.
It's kind of like 17 things we learned from...
It was stadium high clickbait, wasn't it? You won't believe what Leeds fans are saying. Well, click that. Any idea what will eventually happen in this Leeds situation? Eventually, he will go, won't he? Just at some point.
I don't know. I think, he's... even if he were to go, I think Leeds' track record ever since the Ridsdale era is that they cannot attract a well-meaning, well-intentioned owner. It's become toxic, and it's gone from bad to worse to goddamn awful. I think it's there needs to be like when you've got a friend who's he's fallen on hard times. He's maybe got involved in some sort of addiction. He needs an intervention. I think I don't know who leads this intervention, but Leeds need an intervention.
Leeds, the whole of it needs to go to the Priory.
Yeah,
somehow. Bournemouth Everton 5:15. Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Hi.
Everton. Everton really need this. The simmering discontent is kind of beyond simmering now at Everton.
Totally bizarre that they lost to West Brom, wasn't it? It was just literally nobody in football predicted.
What was it, 33, 34 shots?
Something like that. I think Barry possession. On Monday said there were 26, and somebody on the blog had a huge go at him for being sort of 5 or 10 out. But then Barry is hopeless, we know that.
There was a heat map of where West Brom's players' average positions were, and it was just like an atomic bomb had gone off in the 6-yard box. A little white-hot that everyone piled up there. As always with Everton, it's really easy to sit on the outside and say they're playing really entertaining, exciting football for the neutral. They're bringing young players through their academy. They're doing all sorts of noble things. But if you're paying £500-600 for a season ticket, you're going to start to get really, really upset at the fact that they're nowhere near their potential. This season, they should be in the top four, or the top six at the very, very least.
Really top four?
They're a really good team in terms of the players that they've got. And that is largely because of Martinez. Mm-hmm. I think if you'd have had Ross Barkley coming through the Chelsea Youth Academy, he'd have played, maybe a handful of substitutes appearances and he'd currently be in the Eredivisie. But Everton have given him... I think it's 100 games now, isn't it? They've given him lots and lots of time. All of these players have developed there. There are lots of good things, but they're a lot better than their league table suggests, or they should be, at least. And having managed to screw up the League Cup quite so spectacularly, they really, really want to be pushing for this. And Bournemouth...
They were quite unlucky in the League Cup, to be fair.
They were, but it's yet another example of them having a lead and failing to hold on to it for any more than about 5 minutes. It was. It's all desperately disappointing.
Well, an Everton fan would say, "Yeah, but the pitch is a certain size, and the ball went out of the pitch."
Yeah,
but, be a pedant about it.
Well, yeah, but these things happen, don't they? You got to roll with it. But Bournemouth again have bigger issues. They're desperate to stay in the Premier League. They spent an awful lot of money. They're not in particularly good form. I think Crystal Palace was the only victory they had, and that barely counts these days. Palace always lose. This really should be there for Everton.
Nick Ames on Monday was saying that Bournemouth invested but haven't bought any defenders, and their defence is starting to look at a time when it almost the pundits were starting to say, oh, Bournemouth are actually quite a good side, and I think they'll come mid-table. Since that moment, they've just collapsed.
They've still got Simon Francis, who used to be a right back for Southend, and he's still in the centre of defence. And what they had, Bournemouth, they had a lot of headline injuries with people being out for 9 or 10 months, but they had a lot of sort of you know, 4 to 6 week injuries across their defence, which was a defence put together at a total cost of somewhere just under £1 million, I think. But it was players who can do what Bournemouth do, to start the moves gently from the back and get things going. I think there was they didn't really want to mess around with that too much. But yeah.
I still can't quite believe that Simon Francis is a starting centre-half in the Premier League, because we had him at Sheffield United as well. Where
he's a fine player, technically gifted and composed, but yeah, Premier League centre-back is quite a leap from where we used to. Yeah.
Reserve producer Pete says he was hounded out of Charlton by the Boo Boys.
That's appalling,
isn't it? Well, that's Charlton.
Well, look at him now. Yeah. Look at him now. Yeah,
I think well done, Simon Francis. All right, well, that's part two done. Well done, everybody. In part three, we'll look at Sunday's FA Cup games and answer some questions from the Twitter.
Hello, listeners. Producer Ben here with details of an offer from Cornerstone, the official shaving partner of Football Weekly. You all know that shopping for razor blades is dull, as are the final shaves from the last razor in your pack. So why not save yourself time and money and get a closer shave than ever before with an uber-sharp, uber-smart, German-engineered razor of the year from Cornerstone. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk/guardian, enter your initials, pick the delivery scheme that suits you best, and your shaving products will be delivered right to your door. Because you listen to Football Weekly, Cornerstone are giving you £10 of your first delivery. And what's more, if you're not 100% satisfied, they'll give a full refund with absolutely no questions asked. So head to cornerstone.co.uk/guardian to pick up a personally engraved heavy-duty handle and 6 award-winning blades from just 4 of your English pounds. That's cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
Welcome back. This is part three. Sunday, 2 p.m. Blackburn Rovers versus West Ham United. John Ashdown.
there's a slim chance of a shock here, I think. Blackburn ended the horrible losing run against Fulham the other day. They had gone 9 without a win, but they're still sort of labouring under Paul Lambert. Despite having actually quite a few decent players, sort of championship wise, Ben Marshall, the winger, I think is a really good player that should be at a higher level. They've not really beaten anybody to get here. They've beat Oxford and Newport on the way to this stage.
Paul Lambert looked so healthy when he came back to Blackburn, and it's amazing how quickly football management. It's interesting when you think about a football manager. When you're out of work, you literally aren't doing anything, going to a few football matches. And when you're in work, you're under the most relentless pressure. It's almost like you need to come back and sort of job share, you know, so you just do weekends and another manager does midweek or something. Because he just looks like suddenly the pressure's really hit him again.
Yeah, yeah, and he doesn't wear it very well either, does he?
Has he put on the weight again? Is that what's happened? Because he came back chiseled, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, he was saying
his skin was glowing.
Yeah, he looked like he'd been on like a boot camp, I think. Yeah. So I think he was cycling.
Lads banter fest.
Ian, you're sacked for that.
Yeah.
But West Ham, but you sort of think this is a good chance for West Ham, isn't it? West Ham, they could get fifth in the Premier League. They're a point off United, I think. But they've got a chance of winning a trophy. And actually, in this season of all, is there, you know, people will start saying, oh, it's scripted for West Ham to do something great in this last year at Upton Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Add to that.
They're one of that sort of little batch of teams that at this stage you sort of think, well, they don't really have to worry about the league. You know, if they do finish fifth, that is a bit of a Brucey bonus, really. And, you know, how seriously they take the Europa League next season would be kind of interesting to see anyway.
They didn't have a great time of it this
year. Exactly. So, there's no pressure in the league, so the cup is a great opportunity. Although I think Andy Carroll's out and Enna Valencia's out, so there's a bit of a gap in the middle.
Yeah, got a few players injured, actually. Spurs Palace, 3 o'clock Sunday. Adebayor back to the lane.
Sure, he'll get a very warm welcome.
I really think he will.
The people there. For Tottenham, yeah, the games are starting to mount up now. I think this might be a controversial view, but I think of the four teams chasing for the title, Tottenham are the one with the fewest obvious weaknesses. They're the most complete team in there at the moment. But there's so many games now. They've got Fiorentina a few hours after this pod's recorded, and then Palace in the FA Cup, and you're starting to think, do they really need this? You know, maybe going out to Palace this weekend wouldn't necessarily be that bad a thing. So they've only got one striker.
Yeah. James, for the few people that listen to this before the Fiorentina game, Fiorentina have a good season. That's not an easy fixture for Spurs by any means, is it?
No, I mean, they knocked them out this time last year, although Spurs in the first leg at White Hart Lane, they probably did enough in the first 20 minutes to think, we're through. They just didn't score. But yeah, Fiorentina are third in Serie A. They kind of have impressed for the staying power that they've had this season. They refuse to fade away. Everyone's kind of been saying, not treating them like Leicester because it's Fiorentina, but saying, oh, you know, they'll regress to the mean, and they haven't. And yeah, they've got lots of weapons. They play a very similar style to Spurs. You know, I think a lot of people in this country have been impressed with how Spurs, you know, played Eric Dier in midfield, and, you know, the fullbacks bomb on, he drops into defence, and that sort of thing. Fiorentina do a very similar thing. But I think they've got similar priorities to Spurs. I don't think they think they can win the league in Italy, but I think they probably think the Champions League or qualification for that is more likely if they focus their efforts on the league rather than the Europa League. So I think a lot will depend on the first leg, because I know we've talked about Spurs' fixture list. Fiorentina have got some really big games coming up in the next few weeks, I think, against Milan and Roma.
Manchester United are in the FA Cup, but before that they've got Midtjylland, and they're without Wayne Rooney for, 2 months? This is a blow, considering how well Wayne Rooney's been playing.
Yeah, well, earlier in the season you might think, oh, it was quite a good thing for him to be out for 6 weeks. But at the moment, yeah, he's playing much better, and I guess it means that Martial comes inside and Memphis perhaps comes back into the reckoning. It was interesting, I thought, this way that Van Gaal was saying that although he'd rather win the FA Cup, he knows it's better for the club to win the Europa League, which is quite an interesting sort of
anti-Mourinho kind of...
Well, it's just interesting.
Is that CV building for him? Is that box ticking?
Essentially says, yeah, he came to England to win English competitions, and he's already won the UEFA Cup with Ajax, I think.
Yeah, he did.
Back
in
the
Torino.
Day. Yeah. So, I don't think I've ever heard a manager sort of kind of outline their own personal ambitions and how they contradict his best interests of his club. It's really strange.
But that shows that if he does win the Europa League, what a selfless man he
is. Would be, yeah. To put
that
United
is altruism
first.
of the highest order. And then Manchester United go to Shrewsbury on Monday, managed by Mickey Mellon, which is one of my favourite names in lower league football. They're 19th in League One. And it just would be great if they won, wouldn't it?
United.
Shrewsbury United. Chelsea Man City is on Sunday, which is an interesting game, actually. Interesting to see how they both approach it, I suppose.
Yeah, well, Man City will be playing the development squad, by the looks of things. It will be almost entirely the lesser herd of names, because they've got such a horrendous fixture backlog. So they've taken a decision. They're going to throw this one, but they're not going to be playing the big names. So it's a good opportunity for Chelsea and Hiddink, who of course had quite a good record in the FA Cup in that he won it last time.
Oh, that is a good record.
Yeah, it's not bad. One from one. Can't beat 100%.
As they go.
Yeah,
it's quite impressive. Either of you see this then as a Chelsea victory?
Yes,
I'd say yes. If Ian's right and they do field the development team. It'd be quite good to see some of these City Academy players, because, you know, we all hear about how great an Academy City have. We've seen some of them break into the team. No more so than Kelechi. But yeah. Let's go City. I'm going to go City.
Yeah. It's a bit risky in a way, isn't it, in that they've got these... So they've got the FA Cup, Champions League, and then the League Cup final the weekend after. And a league game against Liverpool following that. So in the space of 10 days, their entire season could, in theory, unravel.
Especially considering the last two results.
Yeah, exactly, if it's not already started. And you're getting that... If they do play the kids, then you're running the risk of getting that off to a losing start and sort of starting off that key run on a bad note, I suppose.
And he just totally unravels and they finish fifth and Pellegrini just leaves a note going there. Cheers. I've got some questions to finish off. This is a question on Juve, James, from Devo. It was off the back of, on Monday, Philippe Auclair had a right old go at Paul Pogba. And Davo says, it's not, he wasn't happy. That's this. Pogba should find a new team, question mark. What the actual bleep, question mark. They're just the most successful Italian side of all time and voted second best in Europe in the 20th century, International Federation of Football History and Statistics. They only almost won the Champions League last year. They only have more members worldwide than any Premier League side, dot, dot, dot. I thought Philippe was just saying he was a bit annoyed with Paul Pogba for not playing particularly well.
He probably was. People do go off on tangents.
Was Philippe right to criticise Pogba for giving the ball away and just generally not being as good as he should be?
Pogba likes the showboat, and that's one of the things that makes him so great to watch. I think the criticism of him from his manager, no less, is often that he does things as an end in themselves rather than a mean to an end. Yeah, you do often see him playing a needless Cruyff turn or something on the edge of his box. But come on, that's why we pay the ticket price to watch football. So he could be more consistent, but yeah, we all know the potential of Paul Pogba. He's a great player.
Dave, I hope you're okay as well.
Yeah.
Paul says, does the panel think it is outrageous that Zinedine Zidane would not figure or doesn't figure in Rio Ferdinand's all-time top 10?
Who else is in the top 10?
Well, he put Messi, Ronaldo.
So it's not like a team. It's
no, I don't think yeah. it's a. I don't think. Yeah, he hasn't players, thought of a yeah. formation. He put yeah. Ronaldinho in. How do we feel? Is Zidane in your top 10 ever?
I think it was quite interesting what he said about Zidane last night, Rio. He said that Fergie basically told him that he just, a little bit like Pogba, just does these tricks and that's it. Often they don't they come off, but they don't lead to anything. Mm. Which I thought was, you know. Given
that left foot volley was a good trick.
Wasn't yeah, it wasn't bad,
in
was
the
it?
Champions League.
Yeah, I would put him just for the elegance of Zidane. You know, I mean, such a enigmatic player, and it's kind of you from his body language, you couldn't really ever read what he was going to do. You know, he's quite sphinx-like, and yeah, usually it'd be headbutt someone or do something just outstanding.
My top 10 would be entirely target men: Grant Holt, Steve Howard. Just someone, you know, the forgotten art of holding the ball up.
Brian Dean would definitely be in my top 10.
Jeff Horsfield.
Of course, yeah. Horsfield. Yeah. Yeah.
Brett Angel.
Yes.
Well, Brett Angel.
I'm not sure Brett would quite make it.
Brett Ormerod.
Rodri Cannon says, something about Everton, please, for more than 30 seconds. I think we did that,
didn't
we? I
think I've done that.
Yeah, well done, Ian. Well done. Connor says, did John ever get to 500 beers?
Yeah.
Before we came on,
clearly not been listening to the pod thoroughly. Ended up doing 501 officially last year.
So. Yeah, Messi's goals for Barcelona 300. Why not go for 301?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a bit like Pele as well. Like, he's how many goals did he really score? Because half of them were in sort of friendlies, and I've been drinking Pele related beers,
but they were all in competitive fixtures.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I should hope so. Adam asks, and I don't. Sorry to spring this on you. If anyone knows, that'd be useful. What happens if United and Chelsea win their respective European competitions? All right, but both finish outside the top four. Does that mean third and fourth get Europa League only?
I can say we were talking about this at Sunderland the other day.
Why were you talking about it at Sunderland? It's not something you need to discuss.
Manchester
there,
United were there.
Okay, I'm pretty sure the Champions League is capped at five. Mm. So there can only be five. It's like the worst Highlander ever. There can only be five. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how. You'd think it would be fourth place would lose out again.
You wouldn't rule
know.
Out Chelsea doing it just to piss everyone off, would you?
Yeah.
Suddenly Spurs fall down the league and finish fourth. No, actually they finished third. And then Man United win the Europa League, and then they're just watching the Champions League final with Chelsea there go, it's going to happen again.
Not again.
Well, that's enough for me. I don't know about you lot.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ian, for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I didn't invite you. I don't do those sort of administrative things.
Polite.
No, thanks, James.
Pleasure, Max.
Thank you, John.
Cheers, Max.
James will be back next Monday. Lucky for all of you. I'll be back at some point, I guess, in the future. Cheers.